Today we're beginning here on the top of Vav Amud Aleph by the two dots. Tanur Banan, Yoreh. What is the meaning of Yoreh? We're going to speak about here Yoreh Umalkosh. Those two different types of rain. What is the Yoreh? Shemoreh et abriyot. Gives warning to the people, or it teaches them. Latiach gagotehem. To replaster their roofs. Make sure that nothing's going to leak. We've gone through the dry season, the summer season, without any rain. Now it's time to plaster over the roof, winterize the house, in order that the rain doesn't come in. Achnised perotehem, all the fruits that have been drying out in the field, drying out on the roof, time to bring them in. Velasot kol tzorcheihem, and to do everything you need, meaning anything that is in preparation for the winter season, that's the time. So that rain in the beginning, yoreh, is like a warning sign. It's teaching you that it's time to get ready for the winter and that it's coming. Now the Bach over here, you can see, changes the order. It says Davar Acher. So the Davar Acher that he changes the order to is Davar Acher. Yoreh is Shoreid Benachat. Ve'enu Yoreid Bezaf. That it comes down gently and not in a heavy manner. So that's the second interpretation of what Yoreh is that it's light showers. As Rashi says over here, Ve'achi mashma Yoreh kadam shumareh letalmidav benachat. Like a person who teaches his students in a gentle manner. Dichtiv, and he quotes the pasuk from Qohelet, which is Divrei Chachamim Benachat Nishmaim. That when you want to teach, you want people to accept what you're saying, to receive what you're saying, you speak in a gentle manner. So that would be the Yoreh. It means to teach, but to teach in a gentle manner, and that's what it means, Loredet Benachat. Says Inami, Lashon Chetz Yoreh. Comes with the word Yoreh, like shooting an arrow. Olech B'yosher, Ve'enu Noted Lekan Lekan. A arrow that goes straight and doesn't move from side to side. So similarly, this rain is a light rain that comes straight down. It's not a blustery type of rain which moves all over the place. So that's another possibility why Yoreh means benachat. And the last one he says, Lashon Acher, Shemit Kavein La'aretz, Veinu Yoreid Bezaf, that it directed towards the ground and it doesn't come down with anger. So those are the three different ways that Rashi says the word Yoreh. Here could mean that it's coming benachat velo bezaf. Then, davar acher. Now, davar acher is what we have next is, shemarve et aretz, umashke ad tahom. That it waters the ground, it soaks the ground, and it reaches all the way down to the tahom, to the depths. Shenemar. Because it says in Tehillim, tilameha rave. Its furrows are watered abundantly. Nached gidudeha. Its ridges are settling down. Biri vivim timogegena. And it makes it soft with its showers. Simcha tivarech. Its growth is blessed. Davar acher. We also did this davar acher already, which we mentioned before, which is yoreid benachat v'yoreid bezaf. Oh! Now, the Gemara gives another option, which is on this one that we said, shemarveh et aretz, mashkeh et tahom, which would indicate that it's a pleasant rain, a good rain. Oh, eino yoreh ella. It's not yoreh in the sense that it's coming down gently and it's a nice rain, but rather, shemashir et haperot. It's a rain that comes down that causes the fruits to fall off the trees. Umashtif et hazraim, and it washes away the seeds. Umashtif et hailanot, and it washes away the trees. Tamar lomar malkosh. So how do I know that Yoreh is a positive rain and not something that's a destructive rain? So when it says, because it's compared to malkosh. Ma malkosh lebracha. Just like malkosh is a positive rain and for a bracha. Rashi says, well, how do you know that malkosh is a bracha? Sheyev shar ledosho leshaber granot ulhashir peirot. Because you can't be doresh about the malkosh. Malkosh comes late in the season. Comes in Nisan time. You can't say it's there to break the granot, the silos, and to take the fruits off, because they don't exist at that time. There's nothing for it can't do that type of damage at that time. So it must be for bracha. Af yoreh the bracha. So too, yoreh will be the bracha. I says, Areno, Malkosh, Ella. Well, maybe Malkosh also doesn't have to be bracha, but rather Malkosh will be Shemepilet Abatim. Causes the houses to collapse. Umeshaber et ailanot. And splinters the trees. Umalet askaim, and brings up the crickets or the grasshoppers. Tamud lomar yoreh. So it says it's connected to yoreh. Ma yoreh lebracha, af malkosh lebracha. So then you have a circular situation here, which is that you're saying, well, yoreh is for bracha, so is malkosh, but malkosh lebracha, so is yoreh. You need to have one of them indicate to us that it's lebracha, and that's what the Gemara is about. to do. Now, the word malkosh, which the Gemara will discuss in a second, is that malkosh comes from the word to mal and kasheh. So it could be, mal means to circumcise and kasheh means hard. So that's where the word malkosh can be something that is negative as well. Now, it's going to be a different negative than yoreh because it comes at a different season. So that's why Rashi said before, oh, malkosh is for sure for bracha because it can't have these negatives that yoreh has. But it can have its own set of negatives, which is that it can break the houses and it can splinter the trees. It comes at a time when it can do that type of damage. So Gemara says, v'yoreh gufa minyalan. So the question, how do we get out of this circular problem is, how do we know that yoreh is the bracha? Dichtiv, because it says in Yoel, uvnei tzion gilu, v'simchu b'ashem elokeichem. Rejoice, b'nei tzion, the children of Zion, v'simchu b'ashem elokeichem. And enjoy, celebrate in Hashem your God. Ki natan lachem et amore litztaka, v'yoreh lachem geshen more umalkosh barishon. Because it gives you the more litztaka. Now, litztaka means in its proper measure, in its proper way. So here you see moreh is lebracha, because they're thanking Hashem for it. And he has the geshem moreh umalkosh that comes in the first month that we discussed in yesterday's daf, that in Nisan they had yoreh umalkosh, which is not the normal way. But here you see that moreh or yoreh is lebracha. If that's lebracha, then we can have the juxtaposition between yoreh umalkosh. Now we know that malkosh is also lebracha. And that means that the rains that we're talking about here are positive rains, good rains. Now, the Gemara discusses the Braita that we also quoted yesterday, which is Tanur Rabbanan. Yoreh b'mar Cheshvan, u'malkosh b'nisan. Yoreh comes down, that rain comes down in Cheshvan. The malkosh rain comes down in Nisan. Ata omer yoreh b'mar Cheshvan, u'malkosh b'nisan. Oeinu elo yoreh b'tishrei. Maybe the yoreh is in Tishrei, u'malkosh is in Iyar. Tamal omar b'ito, in its proper time. So the proper time would be for the rains in Mar Cheshvan, we'll see, and for the final rains to come in Nisan. So that's how you know that the Yoreh Malkosh, Bi'ito, is going to come in its time. Its time is Cheshvan and Nisan. Malkosh. What is the meaning of the word Malkosh? I mentioned this above when we discussed Malkosh. Amar Rav Nehilai, Baridi, Amar Shmuel, Davar Shemal Kashiotehem Shel Yisrael. Something that circumcises the difficulties or the stubbornness of B'nai Yisrael, that when they act inappropriately, then the Malkosh gets them straightened out. The rain is a fulcrum, a trigger for Hashem to make B'nai Yisrael do tshuva. If they don't do the right thing, then the Malkosh doesn't come, or the rains don't come, and they do tshuva. So that's what it means, Malkosh. Malkosh means, when the rain doesn't come, Chozrin Yisrael b'tshuva, umitanim vosim tztakot, and that's why it's Malkash Yuteim Shel Yisrael. It circumcises the hardness of Klal Yisrael. The Bei Rabbi Shmuel Tano, why is it called the Malkosh? Davar shememale tvua bekasheha. That it's something that fills in the tvua with its kasheha, with its hardness. Umashlima. This is the final rain to harden the crops, to finish off the crops. Bematnita Tano, in the bright that we learned, davar shiureid ala mililot valakashim. It's a rain that falls on the mau and the kosh, which is the mililot, which are the heads, the grains themselves, balakashim, and the stalks. It's when the items are near full maturity, so there's both a stalk and a head that's there that has mililot. Mililot are the things that you roll in your hands, and you take off, or you shell them that way, which means that you have the grain or the kernels that are there. Tanur Rabbanan, yoreh b'mar Cheshvan, u'malkosh b'nisan. Yoreh comes in Cheshvan, malkosh b'nisan, ata omer yoreh b'mar Cheshvan, u'nei lo b'chodesh kislev. How do you know it's in Cheshvan and not in kislev? Tamal omar, Bi'ito yoreh umalkosh. Ma malkosh bi'ito? Af yoreh bi'ito. Just like the malkosh comes in its time, so too the yoreh comes in its time. Right, so it's interesting that the bi'ito yoreh umalkosh, the ito is really closer to the yoreh. Yet the Gemara says, malkosh, it's clear. Now, it might be because of the drusha of malkosh, it's clear when the ito of malkosh is. Because it's when the grain matures. And that is at a time we know. So then we can reflect back on the yoreh and say, okay, we know when the time for the yoreh, the proper time, is that it comes during Cheshvan. All right, the Marshal takes this out of the Girsa. We can read it also, which is, Kevin Shiatsa Nisan, Biardu Gishamim, Enu Siman Bracha. So once Nisan passes and you get rain, then it's not Siman Bracha. So it's clear that the Be'ito of Malkosh is in Nisan, and there's a window for that or a limit to that. So it's not going to go beyond that. So same thing with regards to the ito of the yoreh, which means that it's in Cheshvan. Tani idach, Now, we'll start to see differentiated opinions here, which is, Yoreh b'mar cheshvan, u'malkosh b'nisan, divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim, Yoreh b'kislev. Yoreh really is in b'kislev. So here we have some uncertainty as to when the Yoreh comes. Does it come in cheshvan, or does it come in kislev? Man chachamim. Who is this individual, or the chachamim, that argue on Rabbi Meir? I'm Rav Chista, Rabbi Yossi. It's Rabbi Yossi who argues on Rabbi Meir and says kislev is the right time. Titania. We have a bright day here, a three-way machloket. When does the rainy season begin? Ezuhi revi'at rishona habechira. When does the first rain fall? Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan, on the third of cheshvan. Benonit, when does the middle beginning rain come? Bishiva bo, on the seventh of cheshvan. Afila, the late first rains come. Bishiv asar bo, on the 17th. Divi Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that there are three dates here. In a second, we'll discuss what the importance of these dates are. But in the first rains, they have three stages, the early, middle, and late stages. For Rabbi Meir, it's the 3rd of Cheshvan, 7th of Cheshvan, and the 17th of Cheshvan. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bishiv'ah, on the 7th of Cheshvan, is the first. Ube Yud Zayin, on the 17th, is the second. Ube Asrim B'Shlosha is the third, and the 23rd is the third one. Right, he is shifted back. Versus having 3, 7, and 17, he's 7, 17, and 23. Rabbi Yossi Omer, the final opinion, B'Yud Zayin, he starts on the 17th. Again, he shifted over one more unit. B'Esrim V'Shlosha, on the 23rd, U'B'Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Rosh Chodesh Kislev is the final part, or the late part of the first rains. V'Kein Haya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ena Yechidim Mit'anim, Achi Yegir Rosh Chodesh Kislev. The Yechidim don't fast until Rosh Chodesh Kislev passes, and there is no rain. Now the Chidim here are Chassidim. Those are the unique individuals in their generation who people look up to for guidance. Those individuals start to fast earlier than the Tzibur. At a certain point, we bring the Tzibur in order to fast as well when we think that it's gone too far. So we have stages in which the fasts build. They both build from the number of people involved, which is it just the leader, is it just the Chassidim, or is it the whole Am? And then we'll see later on in the Masechta that it's, even when it's the whole Am, the type of fast days progress, the severity of the fast days progress. The progression is the longer it goes without rain, the more significant it is, and therefore the more the need for praying and fasting before Hashem. But you see here for Rabbi Yossi that the Zman of the Yoreh could be the Kislev, because that's the early rains, and he says Kislev is that final section of the Vriya Rishona. I'm Rav Chista, Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi. Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. There is an alternative girsa brought by Rashi from his Rebbeim, which is near the Rabbi, to Hachi Garcina. The girsa should be, I'm Rav Chista, Alocha ki Rabbi Yehuda. Alocha should be like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Yossi, and we'll see a second why that would be the case. A Meimer matni lahad Rav Chista b'halishno. A Meimer had Rav Chista's paskin Alocha on this lashon, which we saw actually earlier, which is Shloshaber Marchesvan Sholim et Gershemim. We start to ask for rain on the 3rd of Cheshvan. Rabban Gamliel Omer B'Shivabo. On the 7th of Cheshvan we begin. Am Rav Chista Alocha Rabban Gamliel. Alocha is like Rabban Gamliel, which is our practice, to start asking rain from the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. The reason that Rashi's Rebbe changes the Alocha to be like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Yossi is because we're going to see in a second that the Sheilat Gishamim is determined by the first of the three numbers that you have there. The first time that the rain falls, the Bechira, is when we start to ask for rain. So Rabbi Yehuda says that it starts on the 7th. So if you want to have a consistent Psak Halacha between the two statements of Rav Chista, you would have the Halacha be like Rabbi Yehuda and the Halacha like Rabban Gamliel, which would both say that it starts on the 7th. Right? The other one is Rabbi Yossi, which is this idea that Rosh Chodesh Kislev is that threshold when we start to fast, because then it's significant enough that the rain hasn't fallen yet. So that might be why the Girsa is Halacha Rabbi Yossi, because that also does have impact, and we'll see in a second. So, Keman Az Lahad Tanya. Who does this bright to follow? The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kishamim Shiardu, Shiva Yamim Zecher Zeh, they come 7 days in a row, Tamo Nebehen Rivi'a Rishunash Niash Lishit. You can count the first three Riviyot. Now, this is a very difficult statement, and therefore there are different outcomes here, three or four different Girsaot here, as to deal with this. It's clear that you can't have, according to anybody, if you have raining for 7 days, you can't have it cover the first, second, and third Rivi'a that we mentioned here, because nobody has their dates within 7 days of each other, meaning from the first to the third. So there are different approaches. The Rabbeinu Chananel, for instance, has the gears to read something like this, which is, Gashamim she'erdu shiva yamim zecha zeh, tamunayim behem rivya rishna bishnia, o shnia ushlishit. You can have it be the first and second rivya, or the second and third rivya. So it's not that all three of them, but rather any two of them would match up. So then the answer to that is, Kaman k'Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is the only one who has the dates 7 days apart in both instances. He has it the 17th to the 23rd, which is 7 days including one of the 2 days. And then he has the 23rd to the 1st, which will actually depend on whether it's Malay or not. If it's Chaser, then that's also 7 days including one of them. If it's Malay, then it's 7 days without the dates in between, but could crumble up with a scenario where you have them 7 days apart. No one else has that setup of 7 days apart, because both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have a gap from the 7th to the 17th, which is 10 days apart. So that could only be according to Rabbi Yossi. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is, Shigerdu Geshamim Shivat Yamim. The rain came down, and then it stopped, and then it came down for Shivat Yamim Zechazeh. So it rained, 7 days later it starts to rain again, and rains for 7 days straight. Whose opinion is that? Again, that would be Rabbi Yossi, because it rained the first time, 7 days later it begins to rain, and rains continuously for 7 days. Only Rabbi Yossi's opinion would have all cover all three of the Riviyot. That's another way. Tosafot takes out the Girsa Shlishit. He just takes out the word Shlishit and deals with it that way. The other possibility is Shivat Yamim Zechazer means 7 days and 7 days. That it rained for 7 days straight, and then it rained for another 7 days straight. That's what the Shivat means Zechazer. And again, that would be Rabbi Yossi. So everybody's trying to work with the language here, trying to figure out how that matches in. But in the end, it really fits into Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is the only one who has really 2 7-day periods from the 17th to the 23rd and the 23rd to the 1st. Everybody else has a 10-day period in there, so it wouldn't work according to them. Amar Rav Chista, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Bishlama, so Fred's question, what does this have to do when you say halacha k'Rabbi Yossi? What does it matter that these are the Riviyah, Rishna, Shniyah, and Shlishit? It has to have some practical ramification. Otherwise, what does it mean the halacha is like him? So Riviyah, Rishona, Rishol. The halacha ramification is the first Riviyah is the start of when we ask for rain. So when do we start? That would depend. Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, you start on the 3rd of Cheshvan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the 7th of Cheshvan. According to Rabbi Yossi, on the 17th of Cheshvan. That's why the Rebbe of Rashi changed it to Rabbi Yehuda to match up with the Gamliel. That would be the 7th. Shlishit. The third one is Lehitanot. If the third Riviyah passes and there's no rain, then you begin to fast because there's a problem now. You didn't have the rain in its time. Shnia Lamai. What does the second Riviyah do? There has to be some ramification. Otherwise, why mention it? Some Rabbi Zera Linidarim. Has impact in terms of Nidarim. Titznan. We have a Mishnah. Hanoder Ad Hagishamim. Someone who takes a neder until there is gishamim. And here again, the girsa is amended by the Bach, which is anunder ad gishamim, or ad shihu gishamim, till it will be gishamim. Then that is ad shetered riviyashnia. That is until the second rainfall. Because in Nidarim, we go after Lashon b'nei Adam. Shon b'nei Adam is what the normal people call the first rains, or until the rain comes down. It's not that first rain, it's the second rain. Once the second rain comes, that's what they call the rainy season, that's what they call rain. So that means, when you take a neder out of Shemim, that means out of Yashnia. The Rabbi Kiv Eger says he doesn't know why the Gemara didn't say about Skirut Batim. That when you rent out houses, we saw back in Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, that if you rent the houses until the rainy season, when does your rental terminate? At the Riviyah Shnia. So that's another nafkamina la'alocha. That's a good question. It really goes after Lashon B'nai Adam. So when people say Ad Shamim, do they mean Ad the time that the Riviyah Shnia should come? Or they mean literally when the Riviyah Shnia shows up? It's all, again, it's a question of Lashon B'nai Adam. When they say until the rainy season, that mean literally until it rains, and it's the rainy season, the Riviyah Shnia comes? Or does it mean what normally is the Riviyah Shnia? And that would be whatever the date is based on the different opinions with the second date. Now Rashi says, why is it that the Riviyah Shnia in Lashon B'nei Adam is called the Gishamim? Because he says, Mikan Ve'ilech Mukukelet Adrachim Umuasot Mipnei Gishamim. Because after the second rain, then the roads start to get muddy and things get ruined by the rain. So until that point, it's not called the rainy season. The first rain doesn't do that type of damage. It doesn't have that effect on the roads and on other items. And therefore, you wait until that second rain when it really happens. It says, Lishna Achrina, Adag Shamim, Mashmitre. He says, Gishamim is in plural. So Achitere Gishamim means more than one. So that would be the second rain, not the first rain. So he says, those are two possibilities as to why people call the Gishamim, when is the rainy season begins, is at the Riviyah Shnia. Right now, Rav Zvid Amar, Rav Zvid gives a different suggestion as to what the Reviyah Shnia, what the significance is. We're going to have a number of Amoraim here propose what the significance is. So far we had Rabbi Zeira, who says it has to do with Nedarim. Now we have Rav Zvid saying it has to do with the Zeitim, with the olives. The olives are one of the later of the harvests. It's actually one of the reasons that you can bring Bikurim until Chanukah is because the olive harvest is around Teshvan Kislev, late into the season, and you can bring Bikurim in the Mikdash until that point in time, until Chanukah. It also might have to do with the significance of oil, and Chanukah is that the olive harvest is around Chanukah time. It's slightly before Chanukah time. So now, Zvitim, Tetzman, Meimetai Kol Adam Mutarim Beleket B'Shichcha U'Peya. When are people allowed to go in and take the leftovers or the residuals of the Leket Shichcha U'Peya, meaning anybody, not just Aniyim, M'Shiyachu Nimushot. Once the Nimushot have passed by already, the Gemara will come back and ask you, what does it mean, Nimushot? Beperet Ve'Ololot, which are the same Matnot Aniyim in the Kerem, that are in the vineyards and by the trees, Mishayochu Aniyim Bekerem. Once the Aniyim have gone through the vineyard, Viyavo, and back. So they've gone back and forth. We assume everything's picked over, and they've had Yeush on the remainder of what is there. Bizeitim. When is it that the Matnot Aniyim are done by the Zeitim? Shitereid Riviyah Shnia. Once the second rainfall comes down, then people already have Yeush with regards to finding any of the Matnot Aniyim inside the orchards, the olive orchards. My Nimushot. What does it mean, Nimushot, which was the determination for the Tvuah? When is Leket Shichcha U'Peyah done? That's when the Nimushot have passed through. So what are Nimushot? I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Sabe de Azle Atigra. It's the older individuals that go with a cane. Now, the word Nimushot, Rashi, comes from the word Mimashmesh, which means someone who goes slowly and checks everything over and is touching everything. And these are people who go at a very slow pace, and therefore, they look over, they can see everything. They don't leave anything behind. They don't miss anything because they're moving slowly through there. So that's one way to explain it. It might be that the word nimushot also comes from the word like nimalim, like the ants that go through slowly and they picked it up. So nimushot can also mean that where the ants already take the seeds and are hiding them in their cracks because nobody's coming to pick them up anymore. So nimush, one is that they move at a slow pace. Rishlakish amar, lakote bater lakote. It's when the ani comes and his son is running behind him. So meaning that whatever he misses, his son picks up behind him. So you've already had that type of picked over so well now that once people start seeing Aniyim going and their son's running behind him, they know there's going to be nothing left there because whatever the father didn't get, the son picked up behind him. Rav Papa Amar. Now Rav Papa offers a third interpretation here as to what the significance of the Reviyah Shnia is. It's Kedei Lalech B'Shvilei HaRishut. It's the time period where we stop allowing you to enter into the private fields as a shortcut. Damarmar, mahalchim gol adam b'shvilei harishut ashtereid reviyah shnia. People are allowed to go through these fields and these paths until the rain starts, meaning the second rain. You have during the summertime, there's nothing growing in the fields, they're dried out, and therefore people are, by t'nai beit din, allowed to cross through these fields as a shortcut and make a path through there. Why? Because it has no impact on the field. There's nothing growing there. It won't hurt the owner of the field. So we allow people to use that as a shortcut or as a path during the summer season. Assuming that it's left fallow and it's just sitting there dry during the summer, then it has no negative or detrimental impact. The ground is hard, so it's not going to have, right, it's not going to cause a lot of problems. Once the rain starts to come and you have the new crop in the ground, then walking on it will damage the crop, and also as the season is wetter, then it will also impact that you'll sink into the ground, you'll start making it difficult for them to plow and to work in the fields. So that the cutoff for that is Reviyah Shnia, you can no longer take that dispensation from the courts to go through or cut through the fields. So that's what he says the significance of Reviyah Shnia is. Nachma Yitzhak Amar, this is significant this year, which is the Ve'er Perot Shvit. The time point at which you have to be Ve'er Perot Shvit. This is in the 8th year. In the 8th year, after you have Perot Shvi'it, there's a requirement of Bi'ur Perot Shvi'it. Bi'ur Perot Shvi'it means that you have to eliminate the Perot Shvi'it. It's machloket in the Rishonim, what that means. Do you have to really literally burn them, get rid of them, or you have to be mafkir them? We paskin like the opinions that say you're mafkir them, like the Ramban, who says Bi'ur Perot Shvi'it means to make them hefker, to relinquish ownership over those Perot. Now that happens when the Gemara is going to tell us in a second, at Drusha. A drush is that as long as the item is available to the wild animals in the field, then you're allowed to keep it for your animals. You're allowed to hold on to Perot Shvi. As soon as it's no longer available to those out in the field, then it's no longer permissible for you to keep it. You have to do Biur Perot Shvi. Now this always happens, or generally happens in the eighth year, because it's after the seventh year. I mean, it's the growth from the seventh year. Now, it could be one of two things. This can either be Svichim, after growth in the seventh year, according to one who says that Svichei Shvi'it are Mutar. According to the one who says that Svichei Shvi'it are Asurim, then obviously we're not talking about Svichim here. Then you have to talk about the trees, the fruits, or the leftovers of the trees. So we're talking about things that are left over from the previous year, and now they have Kedushat Shvi'it. They're Perot with Kedushat Shvi'it. And then we have to know, when does the time period to eat them end? So that's what he says here. The Tnan, Ad matai nenim v'sorfim b'tevin u'bekash. Until what point can you use the straw and the stalks as kindling for the fire? So until one can use the tevin u'bekash shel shvi'it. Ad sh'tered reviyashnia. Until the second rains. My time, huh? What's the reason? Dichtiv. Ulevem techa ulechaya asher b'artzecha. It says that the perot will be available to your animals and to the chayot in your land. So Gemara says, what's the connection between the chaya and the beima? The beima you're responsible for, the chaya you're not responsible for. Kol zman shechaya ochelet besadeh, as long as the wild animals can find it and can access it out in the fields, he'achel the be'emtecha b'bayit. You're allowed to feed your animal in the house from those perot shvi'it. Kala lechaya min asadeh, once there's no longer, it's ended, it's finished, that which is available to the wild animals, then kalei, you are commanded lebem techa min abayit, to eliminate, to remove that which is available to your animal inside the house. That is called be'ur shvi'it. Be'ur shvi'it, it says when this crop is no longer available out in the fields, you may no longer keep it in the house. They have lists, you'll get them for shvi'it, which tell you when is be'ur shvi'it for all the different types of vegetables and fruits. Because we have perot shvi'it that are around, especially with otzer beitin, they have perot that have kedushat shvi'it. And since they have kedushat shvi'it, we have to treat them with kedushat shvi'it, which has its own implications, but also means that you will reach a point of biur, perot shvi'it, a point at which they are no longer available out in the fields, and at that point, you have to make them hefker to biur shvi'it. So he says that for kash and tevin, which are items that are dry and need to, for kindling for the fires, that they're available to the animals, they eat that, the dried stalks and the chaff, they eat that until the second rain. Since they can access it or they eat it on the field till the second rain, you can keep it for your animal in the house until the second rain. After that, you have to do Biur Shvi'it. So that's the difference of opinions. We had four different opinions as to what the Reviya Shnia, the significance of it was. Rabbi Zera said it's for Nidarim. Rabbi Zvid said it's for Zeitim. Rabbi Papa said it's for the Shvilim, for the pets. And then we just had Rav Nachman Yitzchak say it has to do with Biur Perut Shvi'it. So those are four different opinions about the halachic significance of the second rain. So Amar Rabbi Abbahu, my lashon rivia. Why are these called rivia rishona, shnia, and shlishit? What is the significance of the word rivia? Davar shuruveya et hakarka. Something that penetrates the ground. Kid Rabbi Yehuda, similar to what Rabbi Yehuda describes allegorically, Davar Rabbi Yehuda, mitra balo da'arahu. That the rain is the husband of the land. Shenemar says the pasuk. We're familiar with it because it's the Haftorah on a fast day. Ki kasher yirei the geshem v'asheleg min hashamayim v'shama lo yashuv ki im hirvat aretz v'holida v'tzmicha. So just like the rain and the snow come from the heavens and come down to the earth and they don't go back up unless they hirvat aretz, until they have soaked the land. Veholida, and then it gives birth, vitzmicha, and it grows. So you see terminology of leida and smicha, human terminology being used with the ground. So you see that when the rain comes down, it impregnates the ground. How does it impregnate the ground? Well then, it has the seeds that grow, and those seeds then emerge from the ground, and that's like the leida, that's like the birth. So there's this parallel between a husband and a wife, and birth, like the rain to the land. And that's what it means, that it's roveya. It has a sexual innuendo. It means that it's penetrating, it's the ba'al of the land. And that's why the word roveya is used over here, which is a terminology that's used between a husband and wife. All right, so now, Rama Ravivo, Revi'a Rishona. What's Revi'a Rishona? Kadesh Tered Bakarka Tefach. The Revi'a Rishona comes down and it soaks the ground until one tefach, deep. Shnia, Kadesh Lagufba Piachavit. By the time you get to Revi'a Shnia, there's enough water there that if you want to create a seal around your barrel and you take the clay from the ground or the dirt from the ground and you make that into the seal, you won't have to add water to it. There's enough water there that it is enough to mix the item without bringing in additional water. Amar Rav Chisda, Gershamim she'adu k'dei l'gufba hen p'ri achavit, ein behem mishum v'atzar. So if we get that type of rain where it soaks through the ground and you don't need additional water to make the seal around the barrels, then it doesn't have the din of atzar teshamayim v'lo yeh matar. That statement of atzar teshamayim means Hashem is punishing us and there's no rain. So if you get that amount of rain already, then you know that we're not under that rule of atzar teshamayim, we're not under that decree of atzar teshamayim. V'amar Rav Chisda g'shamim she'adu kodem v'atzar, ein behem mishum v'atzar. Rain that falls before v'atzar doesn't have a din of v'atzar. Well, v'atzar teshamayim is found in Kriyat Shema. So the rain that falls before Kriyat Shema doesn't have a din of v'atzar teshamayim. Amar Abai, Rai explains, lo amran elo kodem v'atzar d'orta. That's only true of Kriyat Shema at night. Vel kodem v'atzar d'tzafra, Kriyat Shema in the morning, yesh behem mishum v'atzar teshamayim. Then it is under the decree of Atzar et Hashemayim, which the Gemara is going to discuss right now, which is that rain in the early morning, or the early morning rains, are not real. They're not helpful, and they're not real rains. The real rain has to be during the daytime, or even if it's towards the tail end of the day, as long as it's before nightfall, that rain is useful or helpful. So therefore, if it falls before Kriyat Shema Shel Boker, that does not mean that we're out of the woods with regards to the decree of Atzar et Hashemayim. I think here we're talking about smaller rains. We're not talking about significant rains, which rain all night. Since here we're talking about a small rain, how do we know that it's breaking the decree, or it shows us that the decree is not in effect? So if you have a small rain right before Kriyat Shema in the morning, that doesn't eliminate the possibility that it's Atzar et Hashemayim. But if it rains before nightfall, before Kriyat Shema night, then that already shows that the decree is not in effect. Dam Rav Yehuda bar Yitzchak, Hani Ananei Ditzafra, these clouds of the morning, Leipahu Mashasha. They're not real. They don't have substance to them. Dichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk, Ma e'eseh lecha Ephraim, Ma e'eseh lecha Yehuda, v'chastechem k'anan boker. What am I going to do for you, Ephraim? What am I going to do for you, Yehuda? V'chastechem, and your actions and your generosity is like k'anan boker. It's like a morning cloud, which is, or the morning mist, which goes away and has no meaning to it. So your generosity is not a real generosity. So Amrei Rav Papa the Abaye, the Amrei Inche. Isn't this a common saying of the people? V'miftach bavei mitra. If you open up the door in the morning and it's raining outside, bar chamara, the one who is a donkey driver, moch sakach ugnei. Open up your sack and go back to sleep. Because the donkey driver is the one who takes tfuah, grains, from one place to the other. So if he wakes up in the morning and it's raining outside, he says, don't bother to go out. Either because if you take your produce, it's going to get soaked and get ruined anyway. Or, more importantly, this is good rain, which means there's going to be plenty of crops this year. And you're not going to get any benefit from transporting crops from one area to the other because it's going to be bountiful that there won't be a lot of margin in moving crops around. And therefore, open up your sack and go back to sleep instead of going out to work. So there it sounds like the morning rain. When he opens up the door in the morning, he sees it's raining, that it's good. So Lokasha, ha diktir be'iva, ha diktir banane. Depends what type of clouds to come in. If it's a thick cloud cover, then that's real. And that rain is significant, and that is a positive. Ha diktir banane, if it has thin clouds that come in the morning, that doesn't have mamashut, and that's not a bracha to say that v'atzar teshamayim is not in effect. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Tava l'shato, it's great for the year, the tevet armelato, when tevet is a widow. So tevet armelato means that it doesn't rain during tevet. So good is the year, or praised, lucky is the year, in which tevet doesn't have any rain that falls during that period of time. Why should that be, that it's helpful? Some say, and here again there's multiple interpretations about what Bairei Tarbitze means. One is the possibility that the places where they're Marbitz Torah, inan burot, they're not empty. Because you can travel. If it's raining during Tevet, nobody can travel. But if in Tevet it's dry, then it allows the people to travel and the Makumot of Torah will be full because people can reach the Beit Midrash. Because the roads are good. The other possibility is, lo bairi tirbitze, is the ginot, that don't need so much rain, then you'll see them grow and burst forth, if there's not too much rain. If there's too much rain, they flood the gardens and they wash away the seeds. So here, if it doesn't rain during Tevet, then you will see Debo Bayri Tarbitse. The gardens will not be empty. Viki Damre, Telo Shakyo Shudvana. Because it's helpful that it doesn't allow the blasts to come in. If it's raining, then the blasts will also take hold of the crops that are there and ruin them. Like wind blasts and storms, things that would ruin the crops. So when it's dry, they have less impact on the crops. If it's very wet and it's raining, then they have an added impact. So when it doesn't rain in Tevet, it's helpful. Ini, is this really true? Amar Rav Chisda, Tava Deshata, the Tevet, Minevalto. He says just the opposite. What's a good year, or what's a lucky year, in which Tevet is minuval, disgusting. Disgusting means that there's a lot of rain, and the roads are ruined, and the teeth, everything is watery and muddy. That's when it's good. So now it sounds like the other way around. So Lokasha, ha da'ata mitra mi'ikara, ha da'lo'atra mitra mi'ikara. That depends if it rained earlier. So if there was rain earlier, that the Geshamim came down in their time in Mar Cheshvan, then if they come in Tevet, it's too much. It's not necessary. You already got the rains you needed in Cheshvan, then you don't need the extra rain in Tevet. You already had Cheshvan and Kislev, Tevet would be overkill, and then it's a negative. The other case is where, ha, delo atra mitra mi'ikara. There was no rain in Cheshvan, so then Tevet needs to fill in for what wasn't happening in Cheshvan, and you need it in Kislev and Tevet. It tends to be the situation these days, which is that the rainy season seems to be pushed back, and we rarely get rain early in the season. In the Cheshvan and Kislev, we actually have, in the last number of years, the majority of the rain has fallen later in the season. It's fallen in Tevet and Shvat, and sometimes almost the entire season comes in the later part of the winter. Amar Rav Chisda, Gishamim sheyardu al miktzat midina, v'al miktzat midina lo yardu. If it falls on a portion of a country, and not on the other part of a country, ein behem mishum v'atzar. There is no decree of atzar teshamayim, because even if the individuals who don't have it are going to be dried out, then they're going to lose their crops, still someone proximate to them has, and that'll make, that first of all, they can ship the food over. It's not like today where they can ship across the world. But there, it had to be local enough that you can move it. So here, it's local enough because it's within the same country. And also keep a cap on prices because there is local food that is available. Ini, is that really true? V'aktiv, doesn't it say in Amos? Gam anochi manati mikem et geshem. I stopped the rain with another 3 months to go to the harvest. And I had rain fall in one city. And another city I did not have it fall. That area where it fell will be moist and grow. And the other place will be yavesh, will be dried out and no good. So you see that Hashem is saying that's a punishment, where it falls only on some cities and not other areas. From Yehuda Marav, Shtehen leklala. They're both curses. The place where it rains will be a curse because it'll rain too much there. And the place where it doesn't rain will be dried out. So lokasha, hada'ata tuva, hada'ata kedim vaylei. Depends when the rain comes. If too much rain comes in the places that get rain and too little in the other places, then it's a curse. If it comes in the proper amount in the places that do get rain, then it's not a curse. Then it's positive even though other areas don't get rain. Amravashi dekanami, gimidayik that from the pasuk dichtiv timater. Tehei makom matar, shmamina. Timater means that it'll be a place that is full of rain, meaning that it becomes watery. It's so overkill. There's so much water that it basically soaks the place to the point where it's not useful anymore. So that's what it means, timater, over here, that the ground becomes rain. What does it mean, the ground becomes rain? That means that it's flooded. It's too much rain. And that's why it's a curse. But if you get it in its right quantity, then it's not a curse. Amar Yibau, Me'ema Tzayim Mevarchim Ala Gishamim. When do you say the bracha on the Gishamim? This is a bracha that's found in many Sidurim. On the first rains that come, there's a special bracha that we make in Eretz Yisrael because of the excitement that the rain has come. Mishiyatzah chatan nikrat kala. He says, when do you start? When is the appropriate time to do it? When the chatan comes to greet the kala. Now, what that means is, when there's enough rain that the water on the ground already, there are puddles on the ground, and therefore when a drop comes down into a puddle, it bounces and shoots water back up. And then the next drop coming down will meet that one that is coming back up, which is Chatan greeting the Kala. When the drops that hit the ground and cause the puddles to jump and the water to jump out of the puddles and meet the raindrops that are coming down, that's the time that you make the bracha. Mai mevarech. What is the bracha that you make on the new rain? I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. Modim anachnu lecha Hashem Elokeinu al kol tipa v'tipa shorata lanu. that we thank you, Hashem, for every drop that you have brought down on our behalf. V'Rabbi Yochanan Nisayim Bahochit. He ends with this. Ilu finu malei shirak hayam, ushol neinu rinak amon galav. This is from Nishmat Kol Chai, to be familiar to you. Even if we had our mouths were full of praise like the ocean, and our tongues had song, kamon galav, like the waves of the ocean. And then ad, and then he says, where do you finish off? Here, the Gra amends the girsa, which he says that v'mlichu et shimcha malkeinu should be the proper girsa. The one we have is, al yazvunu rachamecha Hashem elokeinu velo azvunu. Though do not leave us, Hashem, your rachamim has not left us, and you've taken care of us. Baruch rov haodot. Blessed is the one. Now, the way we're reading rov haodot, now the Gemara says rov haodot, velo kol haodot. Hashem only deserves the majority of praises, not all the praises. What type of ending is that? So Amarava ema kel haodot. We should end like this. God of praises. Amar Papa, Rapapa says, Hilkach nimrinu l'tarbayu. Therefore, we're going to end with both of them, which is, kel haodot virov haodot. That's how we end the bracha. As Rashi says here, kmo kein v'ishtabach. The same way that we end in ishtabach, kel melech gadol b'tishbachot, kel haodot. So that we have both of those said there. And the understanding now, with the way Rashi says it now, is that when you say kel haodot virov haodot, the rov does not mean now majority, but rather multiplicity. And that's what it means in the end. Kel haodot, the God of praises, virov haodot, who gets a multiplicity of praises. So in the context of kel haodot, rov haodot takes on that positive meaning, which means multiple praises. Whereas when it's standalone, rov haodot sounds like the majority of praises instead of the multiplicity of praises. Truth is that rov haodot by itself is meaningless. Because what does it mean, majority of praise? It doesn't reference anything. So that's why Rav Papa puts them together. And this is Shita Rav Papa throughout Shas, that many times Rav Papa says, Hilkach neminu l'tarbayu, that he reconciles and he takes both opinions and merges them together. And we saw this back in the Gemara in Brachot, that Rav Papa does this 10 times in Shas. And I heard over that in Bishchut, the 10 times that Rav Papa does this in Shas, he has the 10 sons. The 10 sons that are mentioned in the Hadron that we say over the Siyuma Masechta, that the children of Rav Papa, and that comes from this point that he's reconciles, and that's why we mention them. We mention them because all the sons followed in his way, but also because his approach was an important approach, was the ability to reconcile, the ability not to create machloket. Okay, we'll stop over here.